Year we did the Mishnah, which concludes on the third line on the top of Kuf Ches Amid Beis, and now we're up to the Gemara. Maika Omar. The Gemara wants to understand about this mixture of salt that makes a brine, which is called in the language of the Mishnah Hilmi, and the Mishnah prohibits creating this Hilmi, this Mei Melech Merubim, on Shabbos. And we said that it was Nira Kima Abed. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Hachi Kamar. This is how we understand the Mishnah. Ein Osin Hilmi Me Melech Merubim. We cannot make this kind of mixture of a large quantity of salt together with water. And why not? Even though it's Kedei Lichbosh Bahem Yerokos, we would like to soak vegetables inside this mixture. And that's similar to Ma'abed Sa'ar. Aval Osa Hu Meimelech Mu'atim. However, it's permissible to have a small quantity of salt mixed with water. That's not Nirek Ma'abed. Now, of course, we'd love to know what is a large quantity when it's considered that people are like preserving food, and therefore it's Nirek Ma'abed. When is it considered a small amount? And it would seem that the way the Ran defines it, a small amount would be the amount that you would prepare just for use on Shabbos. And that's not something that you're preserving for long term. So, Ha'ose Meimelech Merubim L'Kvishas Yerokos, Kedeshi is Kaimuzman Rav, that's the prohibition. We have a large volume of salt, and it's going to, through the kibush, it's going to be a long-term preserving of the vegetables. But if he's making Meimelech Mu'atim, he wants to eat today on Shabbos, that's not similar to Ma'abed. And according to the Magen Avraham, in Or HaChaim Siman Shin Chaf Aleph, this is only permissible litzorech osa seuda, that you could have this mixture of salt and water only for the use of this particular seuda, not for a seuda acheres, even if you're using a limited amount of salt. However, the Elio Rabba, one of the later poskim amongst the Ashkenazim, he says that you're allowed to create salt water that is mu'atim for the entire Shabbos, even if he doesn't need it for this particular seuda. The Ran's language is mutal itzorach tibul shel osa seuda, which sounds offhand like the Magen Avraham, but the Elio Rab is going to reinterpret that. He doesn't mean for this seuda as opposed to another seuda, but he means that usually that's what people do when they add a little bit of salt into water. They're only using it for this particular seuda, but it's mutter for the entire Shabbos. Rab Yossi, v'halo hu hilmi. In other words, is it not considered, ask Rab Yossi in our Mishnah, hilmi, that should be prohibited, bein merubim bein mu'atim. In other words, if you're prohibiting it with a lot of large volume of salt, then you should go a step further and prohibit it even for a smaller volume of salt. Iboiluhu, the Gemara vacillates, how to understand Rab Yossi when he says hello, hu hilmi bein merub bein mu'at, is Rab Yossi less or is he coming l'chumra? And he wants to prohibit even a small amount of salt, or just the opposite. Ola hatir sabarubim, we should be consistent, and if we're matir a small amount of salt in the mixture, we should go a step further and be matir even a large volume of salt. Om Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi is lahatir, and how do I know that Rabbi Yossi is coming lahatir even merubin, even when there's a large quantity of salt? Midalo kentani, it doesn't say in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi oser. In other words, the Mishnah records Rav Yossi's opinion after the Tanakhama says that salt water is permissible. If Rav Yossi is coming to say that salt water in a small quantity is permissible, is prohibited, it should have just simply said those words, Rav Yossi Oser. Because he's Olal Divrei Tanakhama, and the Tanakhama says Osem Hu Es Me'amelech, which is Mu'atim. So Rav Yossi should have just said, Oser, I prohibit it. But the answer is that Rabbi Yossi is being matir And he's referring to the Tanakhama's statement at the beginning of the Mishnah that if there's a large quantity of salt, it's prohibited. Comes along Rabbi Yossi, he's coming Lahatir. That's the interpretation of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi is not happy with Rabbi Yehuda. Omalei Rabbi, Rabbi says to Rabbi Yehuda, Hamidik Tali Seifa, let's read the Seifa. In Rabbi Yossi's language, he formulates it, V'elu heim mei melach hamutarim. And he goes ahead, Rabbi Yossi, and he spells out which kind of salt water is mutter and how you mix it with shemen, and you mix it with, first you put in the oil into the water or the oil into the salt, and he changes the entire system of a process of how to prepare this. Michlal, it would seem there for the Rabbi Yossi, Balesar, as he's coming to say that whether or not it's a larger amount of salt or a lower quantity of salt, it's always Osir. And he's only going to be Matirid in those specific, if he follows that specific recipe. Elam Rabba, and therefore Rabba comes to the opposite conclusion as Rabbi Yehuda, and that is that Rabbi Yossi is Balesar, V'chein Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Lesar. We now want to bring a support text from a Braisa to Rabba. It says in the Braisa, Tamni Al-Mahochi, Ein Osim Me Melech Merubim Lases Letoch HaKvashim. Now it's to place vegetables in, to have them soak in this large quantity of salt with the water. Shebetoch HaGistera. And they used to put it into a certain klicheres, a certain piece of earthenware called a gister. We discussed this with regard to Tumah Vitara, if you recall. And the reason this is also because he wants to take these vegetables and soak them in a way that they should be preserved, and that already looks like ma'abed. Aval osa hu mei melach mu'otim. So the Tanakhama, this Braisa, allows you to use a smaller volume of salt, the ochel mem pito, and he can dip his bread into this mixture of meimelech and water, v'nosei l'tocha tavshil, or he can take it and mix it in together with his cooked food. That's the Tanakhama. Or Rabbi Yossi, v'chi mepnei shalolu merubim v'alolu mu'otim alolu asurim v'alolu mutarim, is yomru melochem meruba asurim melochem wetis muteres, el elu v'elu asurim hem. And here we see that Rabbi Yossi explicitly says that you cannot make this distinction between a malacha that is made up of a larger amount of salt as opposed to a small amount of salt, and therefore in all cases it's asur. However, there is one case where even Rabbi Yossi would allow mei melach that's prepared on Shabbos. V'elei mei melach hamutarim, nosein shemen v'melach o shemen v'mayim. He mixes oil with salt, or oil with mayim, and then he adds the salt. Ubevad shel yitein mayim v'melach lechatchila, as long as he doesn't put the salt and the water together without shemen. But we see clearly that Rabbi Yossi is coming less, or that's explicit here in this price, and that supports, of course, Rabba and Rabbi Yochanan. Do we paskin like Rabbi Yossi with regard to Hilmi, making this mixture of salt and water? The Gemara in Erevin says on Daf Yudalid, Ein halacha k'Rabbi Yossi behilmi. We passing like the Chachamim, that if it's a small volume of salt, then it's mutter, and that's Opke Paskin in Shulchan Aruch, or Achaim Siman Shin Chof Aleph that we mentioned earlier. Now from Rabbi Yossi, we can learn about the Chachamim. If Rabbi Yossi is Oser, he is more strict in the case of Meimelech Mu'atim, but nevertheless he's Matir in a mixture of Shemen Kodem HaMayim, or Shemen with Melach, until he adds the Mayim and the salt mixture later, then apparently the Chachamim, who prohibit Meimelech Merubim, but nevertheless they would also accept the Heter of Rabbi Yossi in the case where he is very careful not to mix the water and the salt together l'chatchila. However, there are poskim who disagree with that pshat. Now we have a mnemonic device here called Azin, Snon, V'Esrog. And that's the three brisos that we're about to learn now from Rabbi Yehuda Baruch Aviva. So the first of the three brisos of Rabbi Yehuda Baruch Aviva, Tani Rabbi Yehuda Baruch Aviva, Ein Osin Mei Melech Azin B'Shabbos. And Azin means they're very sharp or very, very strong. And the case here is even a case of mu'atim. Notice this price is coming lahachmir, that where until now we thought that if there's a small volume of melach, then it's allowed. But here, if you have very strong salt water, then that would be prohibited, despite the fact that it's mu'atim. That's how the Ran interprets this price. So the Gemara asks, "My may melech azim? You know, what's your definition of strong salt water?" Rabbi Rav Yosef, Bar Abba de Amri Chavayu, they both agree. Kol sheyesh bem harbe melech ad kidei shabetsa tsofa bem. There's such a volume, a serious volume of salt that if you place an egg into this mixture of water and salt, it's actually going to float on the surface. That's called safa. So apparently the physics is such that the water is so saturated with salt that it becomes dense, and even more dense than an egg, such that the egg can now float on the surface. And that's called, in the Lashon Kodesh, it's called Shamelech Monea Oso Milishkoa. So the salt and the density of the salt will prevent the egg from sinking to the bottom. Vekama, and how much melach do you have to put in to make it so saturated with salt that it's denser than an egg? Amar Abaye, trei tilse milcha v'tilsa maya. So you have a ratio here of if you break it down into three, of two parts salt and one part mayim. So you have twice the volume of salt as you have the water. L'may avdile, and why would he create such a very strong salt water combination? And the answer is Amar Rabbi Avo lemuryasa. Now muryasa is something of like an almost an oily substance of fish. And this will produce fish brine. So you soak the fish in this combination, which is mostly salt, as we said, two-thirds salt. And as a result, you will be able to preserve the fish, or pickle the fish, if you will. And this they used to do for kavush, to pickle the fish, and it's also to do so with this very strong combination of salt, because it looks like he's pickling the fish, which, as we said before, is very similar to be ma'abed in order to preserve it for long term. Now the brisa number two, which is called Snon. And that's also a brisa brought down by Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chaviva. Tani Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chaviva ein molchin tznon ubeitza b'Shabbos. So let's say you have radishes and you have eggs. Let's say you have three or four pieces together, and he wants to salt them and make them very hard. And that's called a tikkun. That's something that improves this. And Rashi says, "Asum neshu misaken es hatznon." He's improving the radish with this ed mixture of salt, and that's nira kima'abi. That's similar to tanning, to the salting that's part of the tanning salt process. So you're not allowed to salt a radish or an egg on Shabbos. So you cannot salt three or four pieces together, because the salt improves them, making them hard, and it's very similar to the tanning process of hides. Okay, that's as far as the braisa number two. Rabbi Chizkiya Mishmei D'Abaye Omar, Tznon Osur Ubeitza Muteres. In other words, the salt is very, very effective with regard to radishes. It would really, how should I say, profoundly preserve the radish. But as far as eggs are concerned, he says, Hamelech Eino Moel Kol Kach. It's not so meaningful for the egg, and therefore it's not considered similar to Ma'abed. Now, I'm not exactly sure how Abaye is going to square with the Braisa, because the Braisa says explicitly Ubeitza, unless we assume that when the Braisa speaks about Beitza, it's some sort of a combination of Tznon Ubeitza, when he mixed the two together, like we said before, three or four pieces together. Omar of Nachman, Miresh Havi Malachna Pugla. You know, initially I used to have a minug of salting radishes. The Hebrew is tznon, and the Aramaic is pugla. Amina, and I used to say that afsude kom afsidna le. This is not really a tikkun to salt radishes, but on the contrary, I'm spoiling the radish. This is detrimental for the radish. And why did I think so? The Omar Shmuel, because Shmuel made a statement that a sharp radish, pugla churfe, mile, and that's beneficial. So the melach will now take away the very sharpness of the radish, and if the radish is well appreciated because of its sharpness, then I'm being mafsid the radish, and that's not called derech ibud. You know, whenever you use a salting process, it's always to make a positive impact and preserve something. But if it makes a negative impact, then that's not included in something that looks like derech ibud. But kevan deshamenei leha. Once I heard the following, I changed my minog to be dechi osi. The Chiyasi Ula, when Ula came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, the Omer, and he declared, "B'marava back in Eretz Yisrael, Molchi Kishrei Kishrei," that during the weekday they were involved in. It was the custom to salt piles of radish, meaning that salt is beneficial for radish. Is then Mimlach Lo Malachna? Then on Shabbos, I'm enjoined from doing so. When I put together a number of chatichos and I salt them, that's going to be a tikkun, because that's what we saw was the minhag in Eretz Yisrael to salt, you know, major, you know, piles of radishes, and that's good for the radish. Tabuli vale mitalbuna. Litbol kol chaticha levada bimelach. So if I take individual slices of radish and I want to dip them as they would in Eretz Yisrael into Mei Melach, that for immediate eating, you're certainly allowed to do. That doesn't look in any way like he's preserving them for the future. So Rav Nachman, after he heard the story of Ula about Eretz Yisrael, he wouldn't sprinkle salt on two or more radishes together, but he would dip one at a time into salt and perhaps even salt water, and he would eat them one at a time. Once he's doing this separately, each piece, then it's not similar at all to the long-term implications of ma'abit, of salting in the tanning process. Okay, fine. I'll just read to you what he writes here. Betrumas Hadeshin Kosav Shemutu Litbol Kamachatichos Achas Achas. He's allowed to dip one piece at a time, and not one slice touches, neither one slice touches the other slice. And La Nicham Lefanav, he can put it laid out in front of him to eat it Bazu Acharzu, one after the other. And Rashi seems to imply that if he's salting two at a time, that's asur. But if he's dipping one by one, then it's mutter, even if he puts it on his plate. Tani Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chaviva, and this is the third of the series of three brisos, Esrog. And what's the case of Esrog? Esrog tznonu beitza. Il mole kliposam achitzona enom yotzim mibnei me'ayim li'olam. In other words, these are three things that in potential could really be rough on the digestive system. And what are these three things? He's talking about an esrog, a radish, and an egg. And if not for the outer klipa, the husk on the outside, it would never leave the stomach. Which means that it's difficult for the digestive system. And what saves them is the klipa hachitzona. Okay. Now, let's just add the following. The husk of a radish, the peel of an esrog, the white of an egg, which is called the chel bone, just let me get that straight, which is called the chel bone, correct? So when we talk about an egg, let's say, for example, the word klipa means the shell, and if the Braisa had used the word chel bone, the white of the egg, that would have been a little bit more accurate or more precise. But the Braisa shortens it and mentions the word klipa, which is relevant to radish and esrog, uses the same word klipa with regard to an egg, even though what he's referring to is not the shell of the egg, but rather the white of the egg. Now, in the case of an egg, the yolk of the egg, you can digest it on its own. I don't know why you would need the white of the egg. Maybe the yolk of the egg is so easily digested, it enters the body immediately, and it's not expressed from the stomach as waste matters. So that's why he needs the white of the egg as well. Even today in science, I think they assume that the white of the egg is maybe because of cholesterol, but is healthier than the yellow part of the leg of the egg. But in any event, according to the science here of Rabbi Yehuda Bar Chavivi's third brisa, in these three cases, somehow it's the outer husks that make it more digestible. Ki asa Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, Omri declared, Me olam lo tova gavra biyama this stone, that the sea of stone, what we call the Yam HaMelech, the Dead Sea, is so thick with salt that the power of the salt is such that it prevents, the density of the salt is such that it prevents anyone from sinking. So nobody ever drowned in the sea of stone. So the Gemara asks the following kasha, Amar Rav Yosef, Hafucha stone, Hafucha mila. Actually, stone itself was upside down. And Nefchu gam dvarim amurim mipi Rav Dimi. Just like stone was turned upside down, so too the words of Rav Dimi are a little bit inside out and upside down. Why? Because gavra hu delo tova, bakshura tova. It's true that a human being would not possibly drown in Yam HaMelech. He would float on the top of the water. But a plank of wood would in fact sink to the bottom of Yam HaMelech. Which means that when Rav Dimi said, Me'olam lo tova gavra, so it seems that that would have to be taken pretty much literally. Because he's coming to say that there's no way a human being would drown, but there are elements in the universe that would sink to the bottom. In other words, is it really so? I mean, if you take Rav Yosef literally, word for word, he's saying that a piece of wood would actually sink to the bottom of Yam HaMelech. I don't know that that's true. Apparently, Rav Yosef is just trying to sharpen his Talmidim. In any event, the Chiddush of Rav Dimi is that a man, a human being, could not drown. And we're going to see this in a minute in Abaye. Rav Yosef understood that what Rav Dimi was saying was that a human being would not drown, but a piece of wood would drown, because Rav Dimi should have told us that lo tova sfina, that there was never a boat that sunk in the Dead Sea. And we know that, unfortunately, boats, ships tend to sink if things happen bad. So since he didn't mention anything about ships, he only mentioned something about a gavra, human being, therefore Rav Yosef asked, what are you telling me? Are you implying, Rav Dimi, that a piece of wood would actually sink to the bottom? Omle Abai, no, that's not what Rav Yosef had in mind. Lo mi boy ka omar. He didn't even have to tell you about a kshura, piece of wood. That for sure would not sink. Tafil b'chol meimol sheba olam lo tova. In general, all the sea waters of the world are salty enough so that wood would not sink to the bottom of the sea, I guess under normal circumstances. Ella, but Rav Dimi wants to tell you that in the case of a human being, afilu gavra, the tovak b'chol meimol shebolam, unfortunately he might drown in the seawater, despite its element of salt, but b'yama d'stom, lo tova. Now, what is this whole discussion here that Rav Dimi has to come from Eretz Yisrael and ke'ilu pronounce or reveal to us this secret that a human being will not sink in the waters of the Dead Sea? L'may nafkei mina? And the Gemara answers, ki hod Ravin. Ravin was a colleague of Rav Dimi who came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. Havi shakil v'ozil achorei d'Rabbi Yirmiya. So he was walking behind Rabbi Yirmiya. Now the language here, v'shakil v'ozil, is a little bit strange. You could have said ozil. What's shakil v'ozil? And the Ran explains that that means nasa atzma. He carried himself. That's called shakil. He grabbed himself v'ozil and he went and he walked. He was behind Rabbi Yirmiya. Okay, fine. Aguda de Yama de Stone. Where did this take place? It was on the shore of the Dead Sea. Okay? The bank of the Dead Sea. Omale. So Ravin turns to Rav Yirmiya and he asks him the following question. Mao lemishme lemimshe mahani maya bishabsa. Can I wash my eyes with the water of the Dead Sea? And apparently that has some sort of medicinal element. Medical treatments of this sort through the water of the Dead Sea would be lechora prohibited under the Issa d'Rabbanan of medical treatments on Shabbos Refuah, which is Gzeira Otu Tochen, because when they prepared medicines, they used to do Shchika Samamonim, which is a kind of a Tochen, a grinding. Now again, the salt of the Dead Sea, it seems like it would be more harmful for the eye than helpful. But the Meiri writes over here that the water of the Dead Sea is beneficial for the eye. Again, I don't know exactly, you know, how that works. Now, the only thing I would mention here in this context is a tshuva of the Rashba, where he writes that the cures of the Talmud are not necessarily consistent with our known laws of nature. But the Rashba explains that during the period of creation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu invested in certain herbs, minerals, and procedures the power to effect remedies and refuah. Some of these can be comprehended by human reason, and in some ways they are beyond human reason. So I don't know exactly what to make out of this, but perhaps as we go through this perek, and we're going to have long discussions here about refuah in Talmud, we've had some in the past, we'll have some more now, perhaps we'll get a better grasp on what this is all about. Anyway, the Meiri says that the salt water is healthy for the eye. Omale, so Ravin responds to Rabbi Yirmiyahu's question, he says, Shapir Dami, he's allowed to do so. And why is that so? Because, you know what, maybe he's just washing himself. When it comes to refuah, it all depends upon the spectator. The spectator might attribute this to rechitza, and there's no hechrich. It's not absolutely clear that he's doing it for the sake of refuah. So anything that was prohibited under refuah, the gzera, is based on the roim, who will think that he is involving himself in therapeutic processes, and he might come to shchikas samim money. But anything that could be reinterpreted as if it's normal behavior and it's not for the sake of refuah, that's mutter. Now Ravin asks Rabbi Yirmiyahu a second question. Ma'u lememitz ulemiftach. Would I be allowed to close my eyes and open them as I wash with this mayim, so that when I open my eyes, the water will go into my eye? Omalei, this is a surprising response of Rabbi Yirmiyahu, zu lo shamati. Are you allowed to close and open your eyes while you're washing in the Mei Melach, in the Amah Melach? However, kayotzi vazeh shamati, and I've heard something similar to this, that if it's absolutely clear that he's doing it for refuah, then it's asur. And now Rabbi Yirmiyahu is going to teach us where he heard about this. The Amar Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera said two dinim, two laws. Zimnin Amale. Sometimes he would say it in the name of Rabbi Masna. V'zimnin amalei mishmei d'Rav Ukva, he said it in the name of Mar Ukva. And Chavayu mishmei d'Avud Shmuel v'Levi Amri. They both, Rav Mansa, or Masna, and Mar Ukva heard it in the name of Avud Shmuel, the father of Shmuel, and Levi. And each one reported one law in the name of either Avud Shmuel or Levi. Chad Omar, one said, Yayin b'tocha ayin asur, to put wine inside the eye is asur. Notice he blinks his eye to allow the wine to go into it. This for sure is clearly and obviously a medical procedure. Al gava ayin mutter. However, if you put the wine not inside the eye, but over the eye, so he puts it on his eyelid, and he doesn't deliberately blink it into his eye, this is permitted because the onlooker might think that he's using the wine to wash himself. I don't know why you'd wash yourself with wine, but that's what it says over here. V'chad Amar, and the other one said that he heard from the other, whether it's Avud Shmuel Levi, Rok Tofel Afil Al Gav Ha'ayin Asur, to put saliva even over the eye, right, al gav ha'ayin, which we said to put it on his eyelid, that's prohibited. In other words, when it comes to saliva, that's more obviously a therapeutic method. Now, when he says here, rok tofel, so he's referring to saliva from someone who hasn't tasted anything since he woke up. That's called raw saliva. And it has a very great potency as a curative method. So, for example, the saliva of someone who's fasting contains a large quantity of various chemicals like potassium or sulfocyanide, and these are considered antibacterial chemicals. And this you'll see in a book which is translated by Dr. Posner, which was written by Dr. Proust, which is called Biblical and Talmudic Medicine. So we really have to get a hold of this book. Maybe we can get it online. Tistayim, we can determine that Avud Shmuel, who the Omar, he was the one who said, Yayim betocha ayin osur, that if you put the wine directly inside the eye, that's forbidden. But al gav ha'ayin mutter, but if he puts it over the eye, the wine is on the eyelid, that's mutter. Mida Omar Shmuel, Shmuel said that shora adam pito b'yayin, a person can soak his bread in wine, v'nosan al gav ha'ayin b'shamis, and he can put it over his eye on Shabbos, using it as a kind of the bread is being used as a kind of compress, and nobody knows that he's engaged in medical treatment. He might be washing himself with the wine. Again, heaven knows why you'd wash yourself with wine, but he's using the bread because it's harmful to touch one's eye directly with one's hand, so he uses the wine instead, but he's really just rinsing himself off, washing himself with wine. Dishmiya le miman, from whom did Shmuel hear this law? Lav, should we not assume that Shmuel le miavua, he heard it from his father? So the first law that we said distinguished between wine directly in the eye or wine that was on the eyelid, that can be attributed to avua de Shmuel, and Shmuel actually reiterates this in the name of his father, avua de Shmuel. So Gemara says there's no proof. Why? Ula tamech. In other words, according to you, that any halach that we heard from Shmuel is presumably Shmuel heard from his father, then hadiyamer Shmuel rok tofel afilu agav ha'ayin osur tishmiel le miman. Shmuel says that raw saliva before someone eats, even if you put it over the eye, on the eyelid, is forbidden. Who did he hear it from? If he heard it from his father, then Elalevi Velochada Omar, then Levi didn't say any one of these laws. We said that Levi sent one of these laws. Elochada Shmuel Le Miavua, Vachada Shmuel Le Milevi. Velo Yadin Haimi Avua, Vahaimi Levi. So it means that Shmuel heard these two laws, one in which he was mekil in the case of yayin if it's al gav ha'ayin, two, he was machmir in the case of rok tofel, even al gav ha'ayin, and Shmuel himself, although he heard one of these two laws from his father, apparently he heard another one of these two laws from Levi. We just don't know which one he heard from Avua de Shmuel from his father, which one he heard from Levi. Now we have another law with regard to treating the eyes on Shabbos. Omar Ukva Amar Shmuel Shore Adam Kilorin Me'erev Shabbos, and he translates Kilorin as Mine Asovim O samimonim, certain kinds of herbs or grass that give a certain power, nosim koach b'mayim, they give power, so to speak, into the water, that when you soak them in water, these grasses, the water itself is very healthy for the eyes. And Shmuel says you're allowed to do this shriya on Erev Shabbos, and on Shabbos itself, nosein al gav, Einov b'Shabbos v'einu choshesh. It's not a problem of refuah on Shabbos. So as long as he does the soaking on Erev Shabbos, is this kilurin? And apparently this is a kind of paste. I think we once spoke about it in terms of Meleches Hotzah. This was a common form of a trufa, of a therapy for the eyes back in the time of the Gemara. And we don't know the exact ingredients. We know that it's made up of water, wine, and a mixture of some other liquids, and that we had back on Daf Ayin Vav when we spoke about, you know, how much water you chayev for when you carry it out, the water that you could add to this kilar. In any event, Bar Ukva, the name of Shmuel, is allowing you to use this kilar on Shabbos itself. And the question is, why doesn't this come under the Iser of medical treatment? So the answer is, since the Chachamim required that you soak the medicine before Shabbos, then we're never going to assume that maybe he might come to Shchikas Samamonim to grind herbs, that might be mutter. Anyone could come to the conclusion that you're allowed to grind herbs for medicinal purposes. No one is going to confuse it with any other treatments, because this is unique that we insisted and that he soak it on Erev Shabbos and make this kilar mixture on Erev Shabbos. Now, it's really interesting, because if you talk about the person himself who's using this kilar mixture, and he's allowed to do so, he's the patient, that makes sense that he wouldn't confuse it with other treatments. But in the case, let's say, for example, of applying wine to the eye, where we don't have the requirement of setting it up on Erev Shabbos, so there we can be more machmir. On the other hand, we are being more machmir in the case of kilorin than we are in other treatments by requiring that he prepare it on Erev Shabbos. And that's because there's no other use for kilorin other than for medicine. It's quite clear. So we have to be more machmir about this. And we're going to permit it in a case where it's very thin, it's a solution that looks like wine, and the Rush points out that if it's a thick solution, it's asur. I'm not exactly sure why the onlooker doesn't think that he's doing refuah. Does the onlooker know that it was prepared on Erev Shabbos? I'm missing that piece of the puzzle. So again, kevin shetzrichu oso lishros esakilorim be'erev Shabbos yesh heker shelo yovo lishchok samimonim. And Mishuma Roa, as far as the spectator is concerned, ain lochush. Why? So he writes, she yizbar sheze yayin v'osekach l'rechitza. He's going to think it looks like, since it's thin, like wine, and he's doing it only for purposes of washing, which again, we never knew exactly why yayin is good for washing. So when we spoke about yayin al gav ha'ayin, they didn't require this heker that he do this on Erev Shabbos. Lo tzrichu lasos heker kidei shehu atzma lo yovel lidei shchika samimonim mishum shakilorin nosnin b'ayin rak l'shem refua v'lachein tzorich heker avol yayin shederko gam lirchotz l'shem tanug ein tzorich heker. Bar Levi havi koi kami demar ukva. Just one second, I skip something. And the Gemara says the following. That Bar Levi avikame demar ukva, chazia da'avi moyitz upasach. He saw mar ukva watched Bar Levi put kilorin on his eye, omerle kuli hai vade lo shora mar Shmuel. That far Shmuel didn't go to be matir when he would put kilorin and he would blink his eyes open and closed. So you're going a little bit too far, because opening and closing the eyes, in the case of kilorin, that was not permitted by Shmuel. So it seems like in the case of kilorin, the heter of Shmuel, it has to be in a way that it's not nikar, that he's doing it for medical purposes, but here in the case of blinking, it becomes absolutely evident that he's doing it for medical purposes. Okay, fine. let's add what we said earlier on this daf, that with regard to wine, if you put it on your eyelid, so we said al gav ha'ayin mutter, but Rashi points out that that's only if he doesn't deliberately blink it into his eye. And therefore the onlooker might think he's washing his eye. Here, in the case of Kilorin, what we're saying is, once again, Shmuel was matir, in the case of Kilorin, when he prepared it on Erev Shabbos, to put it al gav einov, and it's going to drip into his eye, because it's on his eyelid, but he cannot deliberately blink, and that's why the Gemara says that Mar Ukva told Bar Levi that he went too far. Sholch le Rav Yanai le Mar Ukva. Rav Yanai sent a question to Mar Ukva with regard to Kilorin. Lishadar lon mar mehanach Kilorin de Mar Shmuel. Please send us. Well, now, what's he asking him to send? It means send some of this Kilorin of Mar Shmuel. And basically, he wanted to get some sort of a sample, I guess you'd say. It's like today you can go to doctors, like dermatologists, they have plenty of samples to give you from different companies. Well, Shmuel was an expert doctor, and therefore please send us a little bit of this Kilorin from Shmuel, as he mixed it. Is Sholach Le, Mar Ukva sent this back to Rav Yanai as a message, and Shadure Mishadrinoloch, and he said, I'll certainly send them to you. Delo Tema Tsar Ayin Ano, don't think that I'm stingy. Ella, but you should know that Hochi Omer Shmuel, Shmuel said the following, Tova Tipas Tsonen Shachris Urechitas Yadayim Raglayim Bechamin Arvis Legigis is Tikotzeitz. I'm sorry, I didn't read it around. Mikol Kilurin Sheba Olam. In other words, it's like that case where he wanted to get a flying donkey. So he said, well, why don't you just feed your donkey barley and stay home? You don't have to go to the other ends of the world to get that that special donkey, or that special horse, or whatever it was. Anyway, here also, he's saying that a drop of cold water in the eyes in the morning and washing your hands and feet in warm water in the evening is even better than Kilurin. So you get all the Kilorin in the world, it's better to be hygienic, and you didn't have to go for this Kilorin. Tanya Nami Hochi, also Braisa, Omer Rabbi Mona, Mishum Rabbi Yehuda, Tova, Tipas, Tzonein, Shachris, Urchitz, Yodayim, Raglayim, Arvis, Mikol Kilurin, Sheba Olah. Hu haya Omer, Rav Mona used to say the following, Yad li ayin tikotzeitz. If a person takes his hand and he puts it to his eye, then he should, so to speak, not literally, but he should have his hand cut off. And, you know, this might have to do with spooks. I don't know, maybe there was an evil spirit called Bas Melach that rests on the hands in the morning. And until you wash three times, you know, Negavasi, you don't get rid of this. And therefore, if you put it into your eye, the spirit causes the eye to go blind. So it could be that all the cases that we're going to learn now have to do with the evil spirit. Yad lachotem tikotzeitz. So if he hasn't washed his hands and he puts it to his nose, that's also very dangerous. Yad la petikotzeitz, if he puts his hand into his mouth, and again he hasn't washed his hands, that is also some evil spirit that's going into his nose or in his mouth. Yad la ozen tikotzeitz, he shouldn't put his hand into his ear. Basically we're talking about all the openings in your body. And again, the evil spirit will cause perhaps deafness or blindness. We don't know exactly, but all these different terrible things. Yad lachasudo tikotzeitz. If the hand goes into a chasuda, he says chasuda is a mokom nekev hakozas dam. So let's say, for example, there was a procedure of bloodletting, and they used to bloodlet from a certain opening in the body, or they would open a little small opening in the body, and now he puts his hand that hasn't been washed yet into that opening, into that puncture, and that's also very, very dangerous. So you're talking about touching with your hand before he washed his hands, a wound, an opening in the body, rubbing a scar. I mean, these are all, you know, this can aggravate, you know, different kinds of wounds on the body. Yad li amo tikotzeitz. If he puts his yad on his privates, that's also something dangerous. Yad li pi tabas tikotzeitz, puts it into the anus. All this is very dangerous because, you know, he's got this evil spirit. Now, in the case of Yad Lepeh, of Yad Lepi Tabas, it doesn't refer to touching before he washed his hands. In other words, if he touches his anus any time of the day, that's dangerous. And the reason for that is that if he touches his anus, and his hand should be cut off so that it doesn't subsequently touch the eye or the ear before it was washed. So even if he washed in the morning, once he touches his anus, he has to make sure to wash it afterwards. Now, it could be that rubbing the anus frequently, if you itch and so on, that could cause hemorrhoids, and that's also unhealthy. And it also could be he shouldn't touch his anus even delicately before washing his hands in the morning, and that's because of the evil spirit. Yad, here we turn to Kuf, Tesomen Aleph, Legigis, if his hand goes into a barrel of beer, then Tikotzeitz. So he touches a beer barrel before he washes his hands in the morning, the evil spirit will enter the beer, and anyone who subsequently drinks from the beer will be harmed. And basically, a person should avoid, says the Mishnah Berurah, touching any type of food before he washes his hands in the morning. And the Bryce explains why he should not touch his nose, or his eyes, or his ears before he washes in the morning. Yad misama, the hand, if it touches the eye before washing, causes blindness. Yad macharesh, if it goes into the ear, it causes deafness. Yad malapolifus, and the yad would generate in the nose or the mouth something called polifus. And polifus is some sort of a foul odor that emanates from the mouth or the nose. And now we're up to Tanya, which is on the second line on Daf Kuf Tes Amid Aleph, which Emir Tzashem will pick up tomorrow.